Dr. John Hope Franklin is our guest here on the Paula Gordon Show. Dr. Franklin, before I let Bill Russell continue in that vein, we have a friend now, I'm happy to say, who is a scientist who brings the physical sciences, physics, chemistry, into the human experience to say that we can never know the outcome of any of our actions. And he goes through with condensed matter physics, if you care, and shows how one grain will start the avalanche, and one will never know what that grain is. And he has many power laws out of physics and chemistry. That, he says, requires of us that we always do our best. And as you tell your story from your parents, that is an additional way of thinking. All that any of us can do is do our best, and then we can never know the outcome. Isn't that also part of that hopefulness rather than despairing that the present condition is not as we would have it be?
Oh, yes. I think that one gets satisfaction out of doing one's best. One must be unhappy if they've got something in them that they do not bring out to make it their best. So that it's absolutely necessary for one, even to live with oneself, it's absolutely necessary to say, well, that's the best I could do, the very best that I could do. And if you do that, then, as my mama said, the angels can't do any better.
One of the interesting things about your life story is the never give up piece, but also what is seems to be very important is the support you had, the connections over your life, the people that were able to help you, you helped them. But we in this country tend to think in terms of individual performance, individual success. Yes, yes. You know what I did, and I, you know, a self-made man or a self-made woman.
John Hope Franklin, the superstar who did it all by himself.
And you give credit lots of different places, starting with your family, but also a long series of colleagues and students that also contributed. And teachers that contributed to your success.
Yes. I dedicated this book to all my students who taught me more than they will ever know. And that extends over a period of some 70 years, almost 70 years that I have been teaching. And I did learn more than they'll ever know. But I also learned from people who were in a position to teach me. I think of one professor, a young white professor, who taught me at Fisk University and who turned my attention to history, and who then prepared me for the study of history by teaching me both in class and out of class, who even went so far as to engage, he was a debate coach, he engaged the debating teams at institutions that I would not have otherwise have ever met or known, for these were white students at so-called white universities. And I debated them, and I found that they were just ordinary people like anybody else. And therefore, I was not afraid of them. I was not disturbed that they were not the same color that I was. So that when I got to graduate school and was in classes with only white students, I had no black students in any of my graduate courses when I was at Harvard University. But they were just like other students to me. Because I had met them before in debating, and they were just like other people. And I knew that they didn't have any special gifts or endowments because they were white. And I wasn't therefore unsettled or unsteady or intimidated by the fact that they were white. I said, well, if they're white, good luck to them, because I'm going to do the best I can to lead the class, to be the superior in every way. And in many instances, I did.
It is important to say, as one looks at the current America in the world, that yes, we have many challenges ahead of us, and we've done some things to make things better over 300 years. When you were a student having these exchanges as a debate team, I debate individual. Jim Crow America was a legally enforced, it was not only, as they say, de facto apartheid, it was de jure apartheid. This, the law of this land was, it was said to be separate and equal, and by the time Brown versus the Board of Education came, and we'll talk more about that, the court said, but it's never equal. It is different in America that we do not have legal segregation and have it for about 50 years. And I say that partly in the context of a friend of mine who pulled out, created a book at the time we celebrated 50 years of Brown versus the Board of Education. She said America at that point chose to be on the right side of history. That change from a legal apartheid state terrorism to at least acknowledging that the law applies equally to everybody, whether it gets enforced well or not, that's a really big, important move in the historical sense, isn't it?
Yes, it's important in the historical sense, and surely in the years following the decision in Brown, we can see incremental improvements, but not nearly enough. And what Brown did, what the decision in the Brown case did, was while granting that there could be no more legal segregation, it did permit what you call de facto segregation, so that the leadership in this country began to plot and plan programs that would ensure de facto segregation just the same. So that I shall never forget, after I worked on the Brown case with Thurgood Marshall, and after we celebrated the victory that the Supreme Court handed down on the 17th of May, 1954, that while we were celebrating and so happy with the decision, many of the opponents of the decision were plotting and planning ways in which to continue segregation, even if it could not be any longer de jure segregation, they would have de facto segregation just the same. So that when Jonathan Kozol writes his book in 2005 regarding segregation in education, he says, and his book is called The Shame of America, he says that the kind of segregation that persists in this country, in education, even in New York City, is a shame, is a disgrace, and is more like a third world country than the advanced country that the United States should be.
One of the things that is so endearing about you as a professional historian is your commitment to tell the truth, which is sort of comes with the job. But in an era when a lot of people don't tell the truth, as in tell lies, big lies, to have someone committed to finding the truth, telling the truth, even though that can be a contested idea, truth, the fact that you are willing to say, yes, we made some progress after the Brown decision, and the cynicism of politicians, and Ronald Reagan comes to my mind, that he would start his 1980 campaign in Philadelphia, Mississippi. It's important to tell the truth about America, and that Ronald Reagan went to Philadelphia, Mississippi, because it was an unspoken statement about the willingness to put up with an unacceptable, un-American behavior, which was segregation.
Not only that, Ronald Reagan became such an icon in this country that at the time of his death, Americans, having forgotten Philadelphia, Mississippi, where he started his campaign, having forgotten that he was the one who broke the back of the strike at the air controllers in New York, in Washington, in 1981 and 2, having forgotten all the positions that he took, they voted him the outstanding president of the United States of all times. And I find that extraordinarily difficult to comprehend. To say nothing, I find it impossible to agree with. But that's what we've got.
Which is why we have to have historians to say, it ain't so. let me go back and show you from primary sources, which is part of what you as a scholar do, what has happened, what is happening, what might happen based on telling the truth in a culture that is perfectly willing to go with celebrity that may or may not reflect the truth.
Yes, yes.
How do you define being an historian?
Well, a historian not only looks at the past, but he looks for problems that have in the past made it impossible for us to see the whole picture. The historian, therefore, by very nature, is a critic of the past. He is what we call a revisionist of the past, that he undertakes to change things, change the way we understand our past, to make it more accurate, to make it more truthful, to make it more relevant to the present. That is, our past should help us understand the present. If it doesn't do that, then there's something wrong with our past, something wrong with our history. We have to use it to help us understand where we've been, where we are, and where we are likely to go.
This very distinguished scholar and historian is Dr. John Hope Franklin. His autobiography is Mirror to America. We, Bill Russell and I, and the students at the New Schools at Carver, will be back with Dr. Franklin in a moment. Please be with us when we return.